John Hanning Speke had accompanied Richard Burton, his superior officer, to Lake Tanganyika. But Burton became so desperately ill that they failed to do the one thing that they'd hoped to do, which was to reach the northern end of Lake Tanganyika and see whether the river there flowed in or out. The significance of this was enormous, because if it flowed out, it was probably going to join up with the Nile further north, and if it flowed in, it would mean that Lake Tanganyika had absolutely nothing at all to do with the Nile. And since Burton had enormous pride in Lake Tanganyika and considered it his personal discovery, this was a very important matter. But Burton had refused to try to get back up there because of his illness, and Speke had said very nicely to him that perhaps he should attempt to reach another lake, which they had heard was reputed to be to the north east, and this would be a great achievement for the expedition if he could manage to do it. And Burton said yes. So Speke was going to attempt it. Burton had previously thought Speke was a failure. When they'd been on an expedition to Somalia, Speke had failed to find a place called the Wadi Nogal, which he had been sent to find, and a little bit earlier on Lake Tanganyika, he had failed to come back with a hired dhow so that they could travel in greater comfort on the lake. So Burton considered him a failure, and so Speke was particularly determined to reach the other lake, which was reputed to be bigger than Burton's. As he headed into the bush, Speke brooded on the fact that Burton had absolutely done his best to dissuade me from going. But eventually Speke managed to assemble a caravan of 34 men, with Bombay and Mabruki as his captains, a local man as his kirangozi or guide, Gaetano as cook, 10 Baluchis as guards, and 20 local men as porters to carry gifts and trade goods. They left Kaze in the evening of 9 July 1858. The following night saw him and his men beyond the borders of Unyanyembe, sleeping in the African village, with Speke curled up in a smoky hut and his men lying beside the cattle or under the eaves of other huts. Each day they would start before dawn, when the air was so cold that Speke's fingers tingled with it. Occasionally he spoiled himself with a hearty breakfast of cold meat, potted Tanganyika shrimps, roselle, which is a kind of jelly, and coffee, which must have made a good start to a day spent travelling through a waterless wilderness of thorn and forest. For a typical lunch, he ate local tomatoes and chilli with a village fowl. After many hours walking through such terrain, Speke always enjoyed coming to villages and seeing the women grinding grain on large slabs of granite, singing as they pounded with small stones held in both hands. The cows, he noticed, were much smaller than at Lake Tanganyika. Every evening his porters danced and sang a song composed for the occasion. It embraced everybody's name connected with the caravan, but more especially Mzungu, the white man. In the hope of getting some milk to drink and some eggs, Speke visited a female chief whose arms were decorated with huge brass rings. After receiving this food, he was happy to let the sultana, a woman of about 60, manipulate his shoes, the first point of notice in these barefooted climbs, he observed, and then touch his trousers, waistcoat, and buttons. Even his hair, which was likened to a lion's mane, he permitted to be touched by various courtiers. Because he agreed with Burton that few Africans believed any traveller so stupid as to go through danger and discomfort for exploring and science, which they simply do not understand, Speke let it be thought that he was going to the lake to barter cloth for large hippopotami teeth. By 29 July, nearly 3 weeks into his march, he was crossing hilly country with well-cultivated valleys dotted with palms. The tropical feel of the landscape told him he was nearing the lake. In fact, on the very next day, 30 July, Speke saw a sheet of water several miles away that turned out to be a creek of the great Nyanza. Like Nyasa, the word Nyanza denoted a large body of water. Before reaching it, they had to cross a deep, muddy watercourse frequented by hippopotami, but on 1 August he was descending from the hills and following the creek, which was wide enough to accommodate small islands. His eyes were still too sensitive for him to travel without wearing his French grey spectacles, which so excited the crowds of sable gentry who followed the caravan that they were soon peering underneath his wide-awake hat to get a sight of his double eyes. Soon, to get some peace, he had to take them off and close his eyes while Bombay led his donkey. 2 days later, with spectacles on his nose again, Speke climbed a low hill, and from its summit, was overjoyed to see the pale blue waters of the Nyanza. Frustratingly, he could get no accurate idea of the lake's size because Ukaruwi and Mazita Islands obstructed his view of the water lying beyond them to the north. But even the limited archipelago he could see entranced him with its sandy beaches and wooded slopes. The islands, each swelling in a gentle slope to a rounded summit, were mirrored in the calm surface of the lake, on which I here and there detected a small black speck, the tiny canoe of some Mwanza fisherman. On the gently shelving plain below me, blue smoke curled above the trees, which here and there concealed villages and hamlets, their brown thatched roofs contrasting with the emerald green of the beautiful milk bush. After 3 weeks in the bush, the lovely margins of the immense and still unseen lake made him dizzy with excitement. To stand here as the white discoverer of the mysterious Nyanza, which was justly called a sea by the Arabs and was entirely unknown in Europe and America, made this the most joyful moment of his life to date. "I no longer felt any doubt," he wrote later, "that the lake at my feet gave birth to that interesting river, the source of which has been the subject of so much speculation and the object of so many explorers. The Arab's tale was proved to the letter. This is a far more extensive lake than the Tanganyika, so broad that you could not see across it, and so long that no one knew its length."